demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a bad case. I'm turning it up. It's getting cold in here, so fire it up. I got a bad case. I'm turning it up. It's getting cold in here, so somebody fire it up.
So the weekend's tax march highlighted the assault on working people and especially the poor, as our tax code again is terribly skewed in favor of the extraordinarily wealthy, and more so now, now that the Republicans have delivered on their campaign pledges to their wealthy donors by making our tax code even more lopsided and our deficits and our debt even more outrageous and soaring higher. I guess now would be the time that you talk fiscal responsibility. I guess this is how Republicans do it. We give away a boatload of money, and then we say, hey, we're broke. It's time to be fiscally responsible. We've got to tighten our belt. Austerity, it's time. Because, you know, we're broke, right? And look, we're already hearing calls for entitlement reform or welfare reform or Medicare reform or Medicaid reform. I got to be honest, I'm kind of tired of hearing of the word reform, because every time I hear it, I think deform, destruction, damage, death, rip off. I think a whole bunch of things. And yes, they are literally talking about taking food from the mouths of children. Remember, this is the party who loves the preborn. But they don't give a tinker's damn about the ones already here, because, after all, children do have the highest rates of poverty of any age group in this country. But we love the children. Love the children. And here to talk about his recent piece, the Republican Poverty Agenda, more job training, more pee. I've asked Art Delaney to come talk with us. He's a HuffPost political writer, reporter, over there at Huffington Post. Arthur, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So more pee, huh?
Yeah, more pee. I'm as surprised as you are, but it's been a real obsession since the welfare reform days, and especially since about 2011. And I honestly thought that it would dissipate, that it would go away as a policy goal, but it has not.
No. I got to tell you, I think there are people who have campaign donors who run drug testing companies. I got to think that's what it is. Because, look, I mean, the places that have done it haven't really caught anyone, but it's been a real boon for the companies that process all this stuff.
I don't think it's a crony deal like that. I think it reflects an ideological desire for workers to have less power. And there's this sort of symbolic ritual that you can make people do that is sort of humiliating, and I think that's what it is.
Yeah, and also to put another obstacle in the way of being able to access those benefits. And it's a perfect winning situation, because look, I drive a truck for a living sometimes, and you know I'm subjected to drug testing all the time. So what you've got is you've got, you know, the working class going, well, I've got to do it. They should have to, too. So it's almost like another one of these moments where it's a perfect opportunity to divide the working class.
That's right. And I think that response is incredibly common and really powerful. I hear it all the time when I write about this, that why shouldn't someone who's getting some kind of benefit just because they're poor not have to do the same be subject to the same indignity that I am in my job. And people don't think that much about the indignity of the drug test. But this, it takes a really private function. It makes you do it for the government or for your job. It's very weird. Antonin Scalia called it, in a Supreme Court decision, a sort of immolation of a person's privacy and dignity. And I thought that was a powerful way of putting it.
Yeah, but you know what they've done, and look, I give Republicans credit, because they have really taken the Jay Gould quote, to the next level. I mean, Jay Gould, the railroad magnate from the 1880s, 1890s, who said, I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. Republicans have figured out how to use that on every issue. They've figured out how to pit us against one another.
Right, and where this comes from, there's no data saying that widespread drug use is hurting our labor force. That is something that this kind of policy, drug tests in return for food stamps, would really alleviate. They say it's because we talked to a business in our district, and they said they couldn't find any workers who could pass a test and take these jobs. And what you're really talking about here is getting workers to put up with drug testing and take jobs for which they might not want to do the work because it doesn't pay enough.
Right.
And it's essentially an effort to reduce what economists call the reservation wage of workers, which is the lowest amount of pay that a person is willing to accept for a given type of work. That's reservation wage. And I think the drug testing, but also the job training, things that make it more difficult to obtain income support without being in a job. This is all about increasing the supply of labor, which reduces its cost. And there's various ways to do it. The job training, the drug testing are two of them. And they're not that likely to succeed with this, but it's remarkable that that's where – it's interesting that that's where Republicans are at after that whole populist presidential campaign that had supposedly completely scrambled politics. It really didn't.
No, I mean, they're the same as they were. But, here's the thing. I mean, we were talking about this. I go back to the Clinton era where they passed welfare reform and you ended up, telling a whole bunch of people, now you got to go out and get jobs. And you flooded the low wage market with a whole bunch of people who, couldn't take the jobs, had a whole bunch of child care issues, had a whole bunch of problems. And you ended up dropping the floor of the salary. And I remember at the time, the McDonald's near us was paying $10 an hour. Welfare reform came $5.15, back down to minimum wage. And to me, that's really what this is really about. It's about, completely flooding the labor pool so that while unemployment is at historic lows right now, wages never go up.
That's right. And I think that that's a plausible explanation. Or at least it partly explains why we've had the stagnant wages that we've had over recent years. We have no cash welfare. We essentially abolished it in the 1990s. And people were like, oh, well, that was a success. But really, it wasn't. It was not as if you could take that away and there'd be no consequence. Plus, expanding the earned income tax credit could also have reduced wages by making people more willing to take work that paid less because they knew the government would kick in springtime with this tax credit. So the government has done a few things that have probably reduced reservation wages all around for the past 30 years. And our policy is not going in a different direction. It's still to try to make these programs less generous.
Yeah. But what do you say to the person who goes, I prescribe to this theory of thought too, that everyone, you go back to, I think it was LaGuardia when he was mayor, said, if you want to work, if you want to eat, you got to work. We've got this mentality in this country that everyone should put in their 40 hours. Everyone should work. What do you say to the person who goes, that's what we should have. Everyone should have a job. I think he hung up on me. because, that's one of those things that has come up a couple of times in that the reality is when you have these kind of programs that you go, here's a couple of dollars for you, but we're not going to give it to this guy. You end up creating that division. And that division is what, it creates this tension. And I think we got Art back on the line. Arthur, thanks for getting back.
Thanks for having me back.
As I was asking, there are folks who say, Arthur, everyone should work. If you want to eat, you got to work.
Right. Well, that's why work requirements is such a strong term for what this policy really is, which is simply a time limit, a cutoff on benefits. If you don't work, if you get a job, you're not going to qualify for them anyway. Supposedly, Republicans want to make it so that you could enroll in a state training program in order to fulfill this requirement. But what it really does is kick you off benefits, it ignores the fact that, according to research, the people who are enrolling in food stamps typically do work both before and after the time that they're enrolled. It's not as if everyone who gets on there receives benefits for years on end. They're like, oh, we made it. We got our food stamps. We'll never work again. So it's a sort of unfair portrayal of how the benefits work. It's not something that you sign up for and you're set for life. We know that people cycle off benefits, and they typically only get them at a low point in their earnings.
Right. No, I go back and I think about my mother. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, and my mother and I were on and off welfare. Or it wasn't welfare then; it was ADC, Aid to Dependent Children. She was on and off food stamps. You know, we get a job in the 1970s. We're not really friendly to single women. She would get a job, something would come up, she'd lose the job, and it was this constant cycle, like you've pointed out. And that happened, you know, virtually everyone in our neighborhood. Because one, you know, we weren't on the bus line, so good luck. There are only so many jobs you could get. Two, childcare problems. Only so many jobs you could get at certain times. So there are all of these other things that play into this. And the other part of it, it's not like these food stamp benefits are all that generous.
Oh, it's $125 a month on average per person. It's not enough to actually pay for all the food a typical person would eat. That's why it's called supplemental. But it, you know, it still can, by making people less desperate, cause them not to take jobs out of desperation, which you'd think would be a good thing, but is not treated that way by policymakers.
I've often said that, and I find it interesting that, you know, the right wing, you know, they shame middle class mothers for going to work. And women who are in poverty who can't go get a job because they've got children to raise, they shame them as well for wanting to stay home with their children. It's this weird kind of bizarre mentality.
I think the fact that children have the highest poverty rate of any age group in the U.S. is a highly underrated national problem. And this kind of policy works in the opposite direction from helping with that, because we know there aren't the sort of flexible arrangements with typical low-wage jobs where you can maintain your attachment to that job and also take care of your family. If you've got like a child care crisis, that's it. You're going to lose your job, and you're more likely to be out of the labor force long-term as a result of that. And this kind of work requirement process would set up a bureaucratic process that would make it more difficult to maintain that connection to income support to help you feed your family.
Yeah, I mean, it's
though they're trying to target people who are not parents of the youngest children or who have dependents. But at the same time, what they would do in this proposal is to expand the categories, the demographics of people who would be subject to this requirement. It already exists, is a funny thing about this, and they're just trying to expand it. It's not as if there is no quote-unquote work requirement in food stamps as it is.
Right. No, and it's once you open the door and they keep opening it wider and wider until eventually it's across the board. And look, I'm not against the idea of a work requirement per se if there was actually work available. I mean, you know, again, I go back to my experience as a kid growing up. There weren't jobs around. So if you were to say there's a hard and fast rule here, there's no way to get to the jobs. The public transportation in this country is horrible. Child care for low-wage workers is even worse. The idea that you're going to force, you know, single parents into a scenario that, or even, you know, people who are struggling at the bottom into these scenarios is just kind of insane unless you've got those supports there to help as well, like decent public transportation, like child care. Look, I'm in favor of, you know, hire people to watch other people's kids. That'd be a good start.
Yeah, that's right. And I have spoken, I have interviewed current and former food stamp recipients who have been cut off by the work requirements that exist today. And those have been waived during the Great Recession and then were coming back on in state after state. And it was often things like, you know, they wanted me to provide an invoice to prove that I'd done this work as a housekeeper. And it totally freaked out my clients. Or I was not able to find transportation to the one office in my county where I could fulfill the requirement by, you know, performing work search under their watchful eye. And there's people said they were hungry and that they lost weight. It's not as if they are, you know, I know we have an obesity epidemic, but it's not as if people just have so much food lying around that these benefits are totally superfluous. The policy does actually result in people experiencing hunger in some situations.
Oh, it's not hunger anymore, Arthur. It's food insecurity. We're no longer hungry anymore. We're insecure.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of trash talk on the war on poverty, but you know, one thing you can say for it is that there isn't the kind of starvation that people actually died from that there was back when, you know, food stamps was not a national program and like racist jurisdictions were allowed to completely exclude black people, for example. I mean, it's a program that works. And we have food insecurity instead of starvation. I mean, you shouldn't really need to have either of those in a rich country, but there is, you know, pretty substantial threat of food insecurity, and this is the population that would be vulnerable to it, the people who would be subject to these requirements.
Yeah, I just find it quite ironic that you've got a boatload of millionaires who are in our Congress who are literally looking to take food out of people's mouths. It's amazing to me, but not surprising. I mean, you know, this has been their policy for a very long time. It just is. So in the coming, you know, because look, we just gave away a huge amount of tax money, almost $2 trillion over the next decade. We're going to go deeper into debt. You know, we're going to pay for it somewhere. You know, so some people are just going to have to tighten their belts.
Well, here's a funny thing that's happening with this one. So the last food stamp bill was 4 years ago. And it was Republicans wanted far more aggressive cuts that actually would have saved tens of billions of dollars. And Democrats were like, okay. And they basically went along with it. This time, Republicans are actually pushing for far more modest cuts that they are not even, that they're saying would not actually save billions of dollars. But Democrats are saying, no way. As far as I can tell from interviews and what members are saying, Democrats are completely unified in opposition to this. So something has changed. You know, perhaps it's just because they think that a blue wave will give them control of the House and they won't have to deal with anything like this at all. But it's a notable difference that Republicans are seeking a more modest change, and Democrats are more unified in opposition to it than they were in 2014.
Or it could be the farmers are screaming that, because at the end of the day, it's basic economics. You give people at the bottom money, they spend it. They put money into the system and it rises upward. And you know, it's a huge, really, you could argue that the food stamp plan is also a huge giveaway to big agribusiness.
The way the system works is you give people money to spend. You don't have this giant bureaucracy that does it for you. So yeah, all the money goes straight to grocery stores and food producers, and farmers are a huge supporter of the food stamp program because their farm subsidies, their agribusiness subsidies, just happen to be attached to it in Congress, and they are in a lot of trouble because commodity prices have been so far down, and Trump is potentially launching a trade war that, you know, since farmers export a lot, they would be vulnerable to. So that's another reason, perhaps, that Democrats feel like they have leverage, because they know that food stamps is the ticket here, not farm subsidies. And farmers are looking at Republicans like, come on, don't screw us over here.
Yeah. Either that or hopefully the Democrats found their spine. There's a lot of hopes here. So what are you paying attention to? I mean, last line of questioning, what are you paying attention to as this goes forward? Because it's your view, I think you said, that you don't think it's really going to go anywhere. What are you watching for?
Well, so the food stamp piece is part of what's called a farm bill. They're going to mark it up on Wednesday. So the Agriculture Committee could vote to pass it out. Republicans can do it without any Democrats. But then the big question is, what happens after that? Will Paul Ryan bother bringing this to the floor if all the Democrats hate it and the conservative House Freedom Caucus hates it because it doesn't cut food stamps enough? In that scenario, I don't think Republicans could get it through the House, in which case you've basically got a stalemate that could carry over until next year, result in a one-year extension of current farm and food stamp policy. That's what I sort of think will happen, barring any changes by the agriculture chairman. So I would look for that after Wednesday to see what is Paul Ryan going to do. Will he bring this up for a vote, or will they just sort of wave a white flag?
Let's hope for, you know, I've been saying it for a while. I'm hoping for status quo. I'm hoping for the gridlock that the Republicans brought us for 6 years under Obama, because then maybe nothing really horrible is going to happen.
You can thank the tax bill, because they used the special fast track budget process, the budget reconciliation.
Right.
They used that, and now they don't have it. Yep. They don't have another budget. So
good point.
Since they use it for tax reform, they can't get around the Democratic filibuster in the Senate.
There you go. Arthur, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Good stuff. Arthur Delaney, reporter over at Huffington Post. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Citizens United, I was excited.
When the kids are united, they can never be divided.
But that was yesterday. There's a brand new sham today.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.